Hello and welcome to People and Profit. I'm Charles Pellegrin. Tax the rich. It's an inviting slogan, simple and logical. Those with the biggest resources should shoulder a larger part of the fiscal burden. And here in France, it's become a controversial flashpoint at a time of intense political wrangling over the fate of the country's public finances. One proposal in particular is at the heart of those debates, the Zuckman tax, named after French economist Gabriel Zuckman. Its concept is simple. If someone has over 100 million euros in assets, for instance, property or stocks, then they'll have to pay 2% of that in taxes. That tax only applies if taxes already due are inferior to that 2% threshold. Luke Schrago has the details.
How exactly can France fix swelling debt of 3.3 trillion euros? For one now notorious economist, there's one way forward.
We are politically blocked over the budget because there is a refusal to seriously get to grips with the problem of not taxing the ultra-rich. It's going to be hard to ask the French to make an effort no matter what, as long as billionaires aren't paying tax on their earnings.
The so-called Zuckman tax would see a 2% levy on those with assets in excess of 100 million euros, applying to around 1,800 French households. Gabriel Zuckman himself insists such a wealth tax could net the state 20 billion euros a year, and he's endorsed by seven Nobel Prize-winning economists and various nations worldwide which would like to see such a levy go global. However, it's toxic on the French right wing, with critics from politicians to business leaders saying it would only net around 5 billion euros a year after pushing the richest to flee abroad or otherwise optimize or evade their taxes entirely. Even representatives for small business have their doubts.
Taxing the tools of work is madness. It's killing the golden goose. When you destroy a business by overtaxing it, it stops producing. The ones who suffer are always the same, those who lose their jobs or never get them in the first place.
Zuckman says that could be offset by maintaining the levy on tax exiles for 5 years after they leave. And popular in Parliament or not, public opinion is on Zuckman's side. A July survey found 74% of those who responded in favour of a tax on France's super rich.
Well, to help us better understand why this tax has come about, what it hopes to achieve, and the challenges it has to face in the public debate, let's speak with Julia Varaskin, policy advisor at the EU Tax Observatory, of which Gabriel Zuckman is the director. Thank you for speaking with us.
Thank you very much for having me.
So tell us more about how the concept for the tax came around. What does it accomplish that the current French tax system doesn't already?
Yeah, so the idea came around after a series of studies, basically, that showed very clearly with evidence that the ultra-rich in France and in other countries basically don't pay proportionally as much tax as everyone else, approximately half compared to the, like, proportionally compared to the rest of the population in France. This emerged particularly in the context of the G20 in 2024, when Gabriel was commissioned to write a report on the taxation and the tax avoidance practices of the ultra-rich globally. And within that context, the proposal of a minimum tax of 2% emerged. So it basically just established a minimum floor of taxation below which we can't basically go for households whose wealth accumulates to 100 million plus. And so it's not really a wealth tax. It just ensures that the taxation of these individuals cannot go below this certain threshold. And the 2% threshold was established based on calculations that basically show that the 2% was the minimum amount that basically just allowed to ensure that the taxation of these individuals would be equivalent to the one of the rest of the population proportionally. So it's the 2% is the amount that allows us to fill this gap and to make the ultra-rich pay as much as everyone else.
And how much do we actually know about the wealth of the ultra-rich? What kind of data do we have or not have to come up with these calculations?
Yeah. So in general, often measuring wealth can be complicated. And it can be made more complicated due to the fact that the rich can organize their wealth in a way that isn't exactly transparent, and so they use things such as having holding companies or shell companies in tax havens, and it can be pretty difficult sometimes to track this wealth. However, at the same time, thanks to a lot of new tools, such as the automatic exchange of banking information, we are right now, and public institutions are right now much more able to locate this wealth. And thanks to different studies that have been able to gather and collect administrative data and combine it with public disclosures from companies, we now have a pretty good picture of the wealth of billionaires in France. And we can see that, for example, in the past 30 years, the wealth of the top of the ultra rich in France went from representing approximately 6% in the late 90s, in 1996, to representing now 42% of GDP in France. So we can see that it grew a lot.
So let's get a sense of how some business leaders have responded to this proposal. On the one hand, and perhaps unsurprisingly, French billionaire Bernard Arnault of LVMH strongly criticized the tax and the economist behind it, saying it would destroy France's economy. And on the other hand, Arthur Mensch, founder and CEO of French AI firm Mistral, had a more nuanced opinion when he was asked about it on national TV. Take a listen.
I'm convinced that we need more fiscal justice in France. Now, it's about how we write the law for this to work. There's always been some tension around redistribution and innovation. What matters is how we think about this debate, and I believe we need a moderate approach. We need to make sure entrepreneurs today, not just us, but the new ones, think that France is the right place for them to start their company. And I would obviously not be able to pay the tax.
So, Julia, how could the Zuckerman tax actually deal with Arthur Mensch's particular situation? Someone who is technically worth a huge amount of money because of stock value, but isn't liquid and wouldn't have necessarily the funds to pay up.
Well, first of all, one very important thing to say is that this case is very rare. Like, in the majority of cases, this is not the case. Usually when billionaires or when rich people are able to have more than 100 million euros in net wealth, they usually are easily very liquid. So there is a very few particular exceptions which are worthy to be taken into consideration and to be taken seriously. But there is options for those cases. An example could be, for example, the case of selling the shares, part of the shares of the company to the state, or, for example, a thing that is already done often by the ultra-rich, taking loans secured against this fortune. So there is ways to make these assets basically liquid, or to pay in nature, basically in shares to the state. So it's, and again, I must stress, this is very, very few cases, because most of the time, actually, billionaires, I keep saying billionaires, but actually, I mean the ultra-rich own businesses that are profitable, they're very profitable, actually, often, and they have liquidity. So these are few exceptions, and there is ways to go around them.
One of the arguments out there, Julia, against the tax is that it's some people are saying it's inefficient, that it wouldn't bring in the 20 billion euros that it promises to bring in, and that it's not actually a tax that's been set up for budgetary reasons or for reasons of restoring public finances, but it's about a more philosophical argument that about fiscal justice. What do you say to that?
Well, first of all, when we talk about these estimates that say that the revenue wouldn't be as high, they're usually based on float methodology, or better, they compare the revenue to previous wealth taxes that were present in France, which we know really well didn't work very well. They didn't raise much revenue, they were not very efficient, and they were not very efficient particularly at taxing the richest individuals, who were paying very little, even under these wealth taxes. So one important thing to notice is that this proposal specifically takes into account all of these failures of past wealth taxes and takes sort of like an opposite approach, learns from these mistakes. So again, it's not really a wealth tax, so it's structured as a minimum tax. So it just establishes a minimum flow. And it has two things that are key differences. One, the threshold at which the tax activates is much higher. So instead of starting at 1 million, it starts at 100 million euros in net wealth. And also a key element that in the past allowed the ultra wealthy to evade these wealth taxes was the fact that they had a lot of exceptions. And this tax, the beauty of it is that it basically doesn't include or doesn't foresee any of these exceptions.
So one stumbling block in the implementation of such a tax is that if France is the first country to have it and other countries don't follow, the wealthy might vote with their feet and leave. The obvious solution to this is a global movement for a billionaire tax. So where are those efforts currently?
Yeah, well, first of all, on tax exile, as I said before, I just want to make sure that we get the facts straight when we talk about it. Tax exile is a risk, but that doesn't mean that without a global movement, countries cannot go forward and implement things on their own. And actually, when we look at the evidence that we have on tax exile of the ultra wealthy, all of the evidence says that it's usually, it exists as a phenomenon, but it's usually very small and it has very limited economic impact. That said, also, as I said before, the law does include an anti-exile clause that would keep people being would keep people liable for the tax for a number of years. That said, a global movement, having a global measure would, of course, improve the outcomes of such a proposal. There is global demands, and I think governments are now understanding that they need to respond to these demands. France is surely one of the countries where the debate is more advanced, but we can see the need for these measures rising across the world. And I do think this is going to become more and more prevalent globally in many, many countries.
Julia Veraskin, your policy advisor at the EU Tax Observatory. Thank you so much for sharing your analysis and insights on this hot debate in France right now.
Thank you very much for having me. It was a pleasure.
Well, that's all for this week. Thank you for watching. As usual, feel free to watch all of our previous episodes on the France 24 app. You can also listen by subscribing to People and Profit on the podcast platform of your choice. Bye-bye for now and stay tuned.